Welcome to Goddess Era. I'm Lucy Caratti, medical doctor, set to empower you through the metamorphosis of menopause.
There's still a huge amount of mystery and unknowingness around perimenopause.
Estrogen affects every cell in the body.
Because it's just not only a woman or a girl's problem.
Hear from experts and those with lived experience.
Help them become more connected to actually what's gone on in their physiology.
I had a total hysterectomy.
It affects your children, your partner, your family.
As we arm you with the tools for the transition.
It's the biggest acting job, or is being myself.
It's been empowering.
Together, let's unlock your inner goddess. So on today's episode, I'm talking with Diane Pascoe. Diane was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome in 1984, which started her on her journey to becoming a naturopath. Her passion is in helping people, particularly perimenopausal women, lose weight, regain their vitality, and lead a long and healthy life. Thank you so much, Diane, for joining me today.
My pleasure, Lucy.
Can you share with us your own journey through perimenopause?
Yes. When I started going through it, it did coincide with COVID, so I think that was an aggravating factor. So what I noticed was, in particular, was definitely my cycles were changing. There was that. But the biggest thing that affected me was this very gradual weight gain and going into spots that would never normally happen for me. And then whatever I would do, which would usually work, it just wasn't cutting through and it just wasn't sticking. So it was almost like I was losing the power over my body to be where I wanted to be as far as my putting on weight. It was just, creeping up and up, and I've always been a slim person. So that's something that I noticed.
And how did that affect you in all aspects of your life?
So at first I wasn't all that bothered about it because, you know, it was just, you know, few kilos, five-ish, and I said, oh well, I'm getting to a certain age, that just means floaty dresses in summer and support wear in winter, that's okay. But then it just seemed to just keep going, and I'd lie in bed and think, what is that stomach, who is this, who am I? And so with that, what happened with me is, of course, I work with weight loss in the clinic. And it was like, right, I've got to get serious about this. I did a lot more reading about perimenopause and its impact on the body, and weight gain would come into that. And so I was then able to tweak what I was normally doing in the clinic and applied that to myself, and then I started to get traction. Amazing. And that was great.
Because weight gain is one of the most distressing parts of perimenopause and menopause, and aside from the obvious health risks associated, it's a big contributor to the psychosocial aspects of menopause, including low self-esteem and that loss of identity. I often have patients say, I don't recognise myself, yes. I don't recognise this body.
Yes, absolutely. So, it can get really dangerous if you're putting on too much weight, making you more susceptible to cardiovascular disease and thyroid issues and so on. So it can be dangerous, but also just even for the nominal small amount of weight, how women then can fit into their clothes, they've got to let go of their wardrobe. So not only are they feeling sort of cognitively not as sharp and their mind not being as clear and emotions all over the place, and then looking at this new body and this new thing called back fat and all the rest that they haven't seen before, it's very confidence zapping. And it affects their identity. Yes, they do. Often people say, and I was saying to myself, who am I? Gosh, who is this?
What are some of the things that contribute to the weight gain at this time of life?
The biggest thing would be probably insulin insensitivity. That is the biggest part. So how your body handles processed and refined carbohydrates changes. So how our body manages it changes. So we much more easily put on weight with that, and it also affects our brain as well, the fogginess in our brain. Also, the perimenopausal process, it's multiple organs and systems that are affected. So So this can be a tipping point for the thyroid not functioning as it once did. This can affect your metabolic rate. Also, with all of the changes with sleep deprivation and how you feel emotionally, this can then really aggravate stress. Up goes the cortisol. That can affect adrenal function, so your energy levels. This in turn feeds into affecting the thyroid when you've got really elevated cortisol levels. So multiple systems all contributing to weight gain. Also, there's an element of our microbiome being affected as well by the perimenopausal process. That contributes to weight gain. If you've got particular types of microbes that contribute to being overweight. Also, liver function as well. You want your liver to be operating efficiently at this time, and that can be compromised too. Not everybody has exactly the same perimenopausal story. There can be different types of weak spots and different types of glitches that can occur.
So this is why it's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
No, no. There are a couple of dietary things early on in the game. If you're not completely and utterly exhausted, that is something that needs to be addressed first, perhaps, say, with some B vitamins and magnesium and carnitine, even some nice herbal tonics such as Romania or licorice, withania, just to help give you a little bit of a lift. So once your energy has been addressed and your sleep to a degree has been addressed, then you'll be riper to combat things relating to your diet, which can make a big difference with your weight and your ability to think, and can make your energy level go up to a next level.
Because that's one of the hardest things, isn't it? To change your lifestyle is one of the hardest things in your dietary patterns.
Yes.
And often if you're not feeling well and, you know, you haven't got that vitality to actually put the energy into it, it's really hard to make those changes.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's an environmental mismatch, isn't it, as far as how our bodies were made. And then what we're exposed to in society, it is this, if you're making an effort to try and lose weight and do the right thing and have more of the healthier diet, you are pushing back against an enormous tide of very high energy foods and lifestyle factors that are going to contribute to you putting on weight. So, yeah, it requires a lot of strength and thinking power. So, yes, it does. That's why whenever I do a particular weight loss program, it's nice if people can come in for a period of time each week, or you can just be accountable to another person. So say if it's not possible to sign up with a naturopath, even if you and a friend were accountable to each other and to talk it through as you take that journey, that can be really helpful.
Amazing. What are some of the common pitfalls in women trying to lose weight or even trying to maintain their weight at this time of life?
One of the biggest pitfalls is not eating enough. That is one of the, it sounds strange and counterintuitive. Getting into like a quasi intermittent fasting where not eating pretty much all day, or maybe just having coffee, then maybe having some sort of protein lunch and then having a big dinner at night, that can be backfiring. Too many starchy carbs, refined sugars, that's all. And they can be hidden. It can be really confusing about where they are. And perhaps not exercising, not having time for that, or finding that a challenge, that is also a downside. Overtraining, though, as well. If you are overtraining and making your body stressed, that is going to contribute to weight gain, because what happens is your body gets very stressed, up goes your cortisol and you get into a bit of a fight-flight mode. Then that causes your body to dump stores of sugars and fat into your body. So it is counteractive. So, yeah, stress, being really stressed is also going to be a problem.
And that's one of the worst things when a woman is trying to lose weight, you automatically get told it's calories in versus calories out. So eat less, exercise more, intermittent fast, and of course people are putting weight on because it's too much stress.
That's right. Also as well, I mean, what we're learning more and more about this amazing thyroid and our metabolic rate is that we need to be consuming carbohydrates throughout the day to maintain our metabolic rate. There's a specific powerful thyroid hormone that if that's getting 20 grams or less of carbohydrate in a day, that hormone's going to plummet, and it can plummet within 24 hours. So if you're not eating, if you're doing really hardcore keto, you can see how that can backfire too. If you're doing predominantly fat and protein, that will backfire.
So what are some of your basic food principles that you give your patients?
Always start with breakfast and make sure it's protein rich. That's number one. You're breaking your fast with protein. That across whether you are perimenopausal or not, all weight loss programs, most of them, do advocate for that, because that is going to help keep you full and stop you getting hungry during the day, and it's going to be marvelous for stabilizing your blood sugar. Definitely snack, a protein-rich snack, not going for really fatty cheeses like brie or sausage or something like that, but going more for things such as nuts and seeds, even having a bit of fruit at that time as well to complement it. And then throughout the day when you eat, just watching your portions. So I always say a palm's worth, so the thickness and width of your palm of protein. Now, nice sources of protein, not prosciutto, not sausages, not burgers, not lots of red meat, not camembert or high fat, but other types of protein, whether you're having eggs, fish, chicken, tofu, tempeh. But if you're having tofu or tempeh, you're going to double the amount. You could actually have more. Feta is really lovely. Kangaroo is actually a really nice source of lean protein. And red meat once a week is a really nice idea too, but not going too far with that. And having the 3 handfuls of salad and veggies, definitely a lunch and definitely at dinner, and an afternoon snack. So with that, you are preserving your muscle and you are also improving what we call your metabolic flexibility. You're going to be encouraging your brain especially to be using more ketone bodies as a source of energy. So that means you're going to get much better clarity. You're going to stabilize your blood sugar economy in general. So you're going to get better energy levels and you're going to increase the sensitivity of your insulin.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you ever ask patients to track their protein? Because I know the amount of protein you actually need is quite high, isn't it? Some people think that 100 grams, say, of steak equals 100 grams of protein, no. But knowing that it's only 25 grams. So do you ask patients to track, or do you do that for them?
What happens is that I do emphasise that as we actually get older, when you're in perimenopause and menopause, it actually tips up a bit how much protein we need. What I do with that is I look at how they're feeling. If they're still feeling a bit hungry or if they're losing muscle, that's when I will up their protein to a degree. So something that I do is I watch what's happening with their body fat and their muscle mass. I track that on a regular basis.
So you do body composition tracking?
Yeah. Yes. Amazing. Yes. And that tells me a lot. So if you're losing muscle, then that's a sign that you're just not getting enough protein.
And that can be a tricky part of actually seeing just the scales, can't it? Because sometimes you might be losing weight, but you're actually losing muscle and putting on a bit of fat. So knowing the actual composition is really great.
Yes, yeah. So just say you don't have access to a body composition device or whatever. Something that is really helpful for keeping at a healthy composition is monitoring your waist measurement. I like to go the same spot each time. So halfway between the bottom part of your rib and between the top of your hip, and monitoring that, you'll be able to see if you are slimming down in that regard. And that's where you don't want to be holding fat as well. That's where it gets to be, you know, dangerous fat if it gets beyond a certain level.
Amazing. Any other food principles that you start with or that you continue with vegetable types, or do you keep that just quite general with handfuls?
So initially, So when you just say you're a perimenopausal woman, you want to be really strict for, say, just 9 days. You want to focus more on, say, green-coloured veggies. And you're wanting to keep away a bit from potato and sweet potato because they're quite starchy. It's just for the time being. And so for 9 days, yeah, you basically most of your vegetables and salads are perfectly fine. And so that's what I recommend.
Amazing. Mm. What about for sugar cravings? Because I find that's something people find really hard to, I mean, obviously increasing the protein will help, but do you have any other tricks for people that are really grabbing for a mid-afternoon sugar hit?
So this is where it comes into play, that protein at breakfast and having those regular snacks. Because once you start to get hungry or you've left it too long and you've actually got a little bit malnourished because of that time span of not eating, so preventative measures of making sure that you've eaten enough is going to help stop the sugar drops. If you need a bit of extra help in that regard, there are supplements such as chromium and so on. They are very helpful. Magnesium can be helpful too as far as helping your sugar cravings. And there can also be quite nice keto-style snacks, which can be helpful as far as, making you feel satisfied in that regard. But prevention is the key. Sometimes, though, I will have people who've got very busy schedules, such as people who are, say, a night shift workers and are nurses, that type of thing, and they can get quite tired. So I would incorporate some sort of complex carbohydrate, like a very grainy bread or a grainy rye vita biscuit, just to help them through as a good energy source. The worst thing you can do is go for something sweet or white.
And I think that's the problem with gluten-free diets now, because, 15 years ago there weren't the gluten-free products available. So if someone went gluten-free, they'd go for more whole foods, whereas there's so many things available now which are just full. You think you're being healthy.
Yes.
But they're full of sugars and other, corn starches and rice flours, which are really dropping, increasing those sugar spikes.
That's right. And so that's why it's an individualised thing as far as what do they really need as far as going into that starchy carb territory. And they can also use simple sugars in the form of fruit, of course. That's available too. So that's why the case of simplicity, not having to think too much about what am I going to eat now and how much have I had of that, for temporarily until you've got to your goal, I will often take out things like the grains completely for a period of time.
What herbs or supplements do you find useful? So you've mentioned chromium and magnesium. Mm. Are there any other herbs or supplements that you use in specific circumstances to help women with this journey?
Okay, so it depends on the symptoms. So just say you are the type of person, as part of your journey, you get a lot of gut fullness and indigestion. Perhaps you're also getting very bloated and windy and have a lot of gut issues. Swedish bitters or any type of liquid bitters, that's been something that's been around for hundreds of years to help promote your digestive secretions, your bile salts, etc., which will help with your body on so many levels and in turn does actually help with weight loss. Then, of course, looking at your microbiome, it's so easy to get an imbalance there, and going through perimenopause will affect that. So using things such as antimicrobials, things such as black walnut and so on, they can be very handy. And even berberine in that regard, that can also be helpful. And garlic, counteracting the overgrowth of too many microbes.
The berberine's interesting as well, because it's likened to a natural metformin, which a lot of the longevity doctors in the US use, even though they don't need it for insulin or diabetes. That it's been shown to have a really powerful longevity aspect to it. So berberine's a beautiful one to use.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And also, if you do have say, a subclinical thyroid issue. I mean, you would want to talk to somebody about that, but you may have a need for just a low dose of iodine and tyrosine to support that, or even just a trace of zinc and selenium to make sure that your thyroid is functioning properly, or even myo-inositol for helping with your proper thyroid hormonal conversions, or if you are, say, a polycystic syndrome type of person and get a lot of insulin resistance, that can also be handy.
The other thing, the bitters that you just mentioned, bitters actually increase your GLP-1, which is the same as Ozempic. Well, your body,
yes.
Ozempic makes your body think its GLP-1 is increased.
Yes.
And
yes.
That leads me to my next question, what your thoughts are on the medication of the moment, Ozempic.
Yes. My thoughts are, from what I have seen, it can be very effective, especially if you are morbidly obese. Yes, absolutely. You cannot go on being morbidly obese, and that is a very difficult thing to tackle. When you're in that position, it is a disease, and consuming food is like the equivalent of having cocaine or an orgasm. It is incredibly powerful. So whatever it takes to stop you being obese, that is a good idea. However, if you're just wanting to drop 5 or 10 kilos, there are side effects. There is a downside. We're not 100% sure of the long-term effects, and there can still be issues with supply. So if you can do other things, such as working with your diet in whichever way, that's going to be a much better option.
Again, it's a band-aid approach, isn't it? If we're not sorting out the underlying metabolic issue that's happening.
Yes.
We're not helping your long-term risk factors. You might be looking skinny, but you're not having good quality long-term health.
No. And also, when our body isn't doing what we would like it, and it's giving us messages. So we don't want to suppress the messages. We want to listen to what our body is saying and address the underlying issue and get to the underlying cause.
And I think we want the GLP-1 to be increased, not just our body think it.
Yes.
Because that's why I find a lot of patients, they stop it. They get good results, most of them. They feel nauseous and want to vomit the whole time, but they get results because they're not eating.
Yeah.
Then they stop and they have this ravenous hunger and they can't stop eating. So it's sort of this rebound weight.
Yes, absolutely. Gain. And I've even seen where there's been a supply issue where it was working well round one, then there was a supply problem and this person didn't respond to it the second time around and got bigger and bigger and bigger. Yes.
I get a bit worried about how much it's used everywhere.
Yes, especially in America.
Yes. So what surprised you the most about menopause?
I think the emotional factor. Absolutely. It's sort of similar to when you first start having babies, and when you have a baby and just how much you're in survival mode and all the emotions and all the downside of it. It's not really talked about all that much until now. I think the emotional aspect of your body going through perimenopause is just enormous. I mean, I've had a lot of therapy over the years, and normally, say if you're in a PMT zone or if something happens and you're feeling a little bit irrational or highly sensitive or just teary and zero resilience, I could easily just talk to myself, go, oh, well, this is just that, and talk myself down. I noticed that when I was going through perimenopause, I couldn't talk myself down. It did feel like when I was a teenager, when your emotions are just running so high and so up and down, and it just would feel really terrible. So I was shocked by that. The brain fog, the lack of clarity, the vagueness, short-term memory, that type of thing, that was a surprise as well. So, yeah. When I was with my training, I was prepared for, oh, my husband doesn't understand me feelings. No, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than that. And you can be incredibly sane and mature and together and with it. And then the next minute, you're not.
And it really is that second puberty.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah. And second puberty, there were times when that was really tough.
And I think the more we all talk about it, I mean, I think we are in a better generation.
Yes.
We're so much better off than generations going forward. But it's we're still just at the tip of the iceberg with the conversations that we're all having about
yes.
it.
Yes, but I noticed that my friends and I, we're all talking about it. We're all talking about it, which is great.
Great.
Well, yes.
It is normal. And it's not just a women's problem.
No.
You know, the husbands need to understand, the men in your life need to understand, men in the workforce
yes.
that are you know, dealing with women at this sort of age, understanding the value of women at this age, but also the struggles they might be having.
Yes.
And it's not devaluing the person. They're going to come out of it stronger and more vital than ever, but
they definitely will. I took comfort in, I'm feeling, you know, a lot better now, hearing how when we're aged between 8 and 10 as little girls, that's when our personality is formed, and when we've got that sass and that spirit, and it's who we are. And then once puberty starts to kick in, we start to conform to those particular female roles. So now that we're, you know, once you go through menopause, you sort of are unburdened from that role and you kind of reclaim your 8 to 10-year-old self, which I think is fantastic.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about that.
Mm.
What advice would you give to women going through this transition period?
Be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Don't rob yourself all the time of your self-esteem by putting yourself down thinking, oh, I forgot that, I'm so stupid. Careful of your self-talk. Just accept that your brain is going through a transition and it will pass. As far as your cognitive skills, the emotions will also settle, so be kind to yourself about that. Also, be kind to yourself with the whole weight loss journey too. I find so many times with women, they are so hard on themselves and will always think the worst and come in for a check-in and say, oh, I've been so naughty, and using all of that type of terminology, which I correct them about. And also they're like, oh, I put on so much weight, and often they haven't. So that's the biggest thing. Be kind to yourself as you go through this.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Some really great tips that people can start straight away to help them feeling stronger and more with more vitality, which is great.
My pleasure. Better days are to come.
Yes, love it.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lucy.